Good morning. I'd like to welcome everyone to the October 23rd, 2025 meeting of the City of Savannah Zoning Board of Appeals. This is a quasi-judicial proceeding. All those wishing to give testimonies during these proceedings will please sign in, and witnesses will be sworn in prior to giving testimony. All proceedings of the Savannah ZBA are recorded. Decisions of this board are final. Challenges to the decisions of Savannah Zoning Board of Appeals must be filed through the Superior Court of Chatham County. If you have any cell phones or noise-making devices, please silence them at this time and stand and join me in the prayer and the Pledge of Allegiance. Father, we just thank you for time to come together to do the business of this city. Thank you, Lord, for the privilege of living here. Thank you for these men and women that have come and turned out today for this. Lord, I pray that you'd give us wisdom to make right decisions. Lord, I pray your blessings on this city, that you'd raise up godly men and women in every place of authority to do your will and do your business here. Lord, I pray your blessings on every marriage and every family in Savannah and Chatham County. We ask it in Jesus' name. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
If you're planning to speak or give testimony here today, if you will, please stand and raise your right hand and repeat after me. If you're at home, do this. And if you're tuning in online, do it at home. I do solemnly swear to tell the truth. The whole truth.
The whole truth.
And nothing but the truth.
And nothing but the truth.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Thank you. All right, next we're going to have the approval of the minutes from the August 28th, 2025 meeting. Do I hear a motion to approve the minutes?
I so move.
All right, Mrs. Jones has made a motion to approve the minutes. Mr. Plunk has seconded. Mr. Ball, how do you vote?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yeah, aye.
Mr. Condon?
Yes.
Mr. Turner?
Yes.
Mrs. Jones?
Yes.
Mr. Griffith?
Yes.
Motion is passed and the minutes are approved. Next, we're going to have the approval of the minutes from the September 25th, 2025 meeting. Do I hear a motion to approve?
So move.
Second.
Mrs. Jones made a motion to approve. Mr. Plunk seconded the motion. Mr. Griffith, how do you vote?
Yes.
Mrs. Jones?
Yes.
Mr. Turner?
Yes.
Mr. Condon?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Mr. Ball?
Yes.
All right. Motion passes and the minutes are approved. So I hear a motion to approve the final agenda as you see it before you.
So moved.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
All right. Motion made by Mr. Plunk, seconded by Mrs. Jones. Mr. Ball, how do you vote?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Mr. Condon?
Yes.
Mr. Turner?
Yes.
Mrs. Jones?
Yes.
Mr. Griffith?
Yes.
All right. The motion passes and the agenda is approved. All right. The regular agenda. We're going to hear first 208 West Jones Street, variance to exceed minimum square footage for ADU 25-004817.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the board. I'm Rohan, planner from the MPC. And this petition requests a variance to increase the allowable footprint for an accessory dwelling unit from the permitted 40% of the principal structure to 56.7%, resulting in a footprint of 562.47 square feet. The subject property is basically two adjoining parcels, and that is 208 West Jones and a rear lot. Both are under common ownership and located within the DR district. The primary structure is a three-story contributing townhouse constructed in 1886. And the rear parcel was historically associated with 208 West Jones, but it's been treated as a part of the same zoning lot under the provisions of 11.5.3, which allows the substandard adjoining lots under common ownership to be considered as one lot for zoning purposes. A recombination request for the parcel was reviewed and denied by the HDBR in June 2024. Primary reason was the fact that you're able to use it as a common lot without needing a recombination. The proposed ADU is two stories in height with a footprint of 562.47 square feet, resulting in an ADU to primary footprint ratio to be 56.7%. As per the 8.7.4 regulations, we know that ADU cannot go beyond 40%. If they were to limit themselves to 40%, they'd be around 396 square feet for the ADU. Staff finds that the proposed variance is consistent with the intent of the ordinance, and the site being the special condition in this case includes an irregularly shaped subdivided lot that creates a constraint, and the condition stems from the historic development patterns and parceling of the block itself. The intent is to construct a contextually appropriate carriage house structure as per what is submitted and not to maximize profit. And the strict application of the 40% would keep them sub 400 square feet. And this variance that is requested may not represent the absolute minimum that is required, but some degree of relief is necessary to enable the construction of a functional, historically compatible ADU, given the constraints of the site. And the approval does not confer special privileges. Other historic properties with similar constraints have seen such a variance before, and hence staff recommends approval of the request to increase the maximum allowable footprint for the ADU from 40% to 56.7 as asked of the principal structure, based on the site's configuration, zoning treatment, and prior historic approvals and proposed designs. Thank you. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Does anyone have any questions for staff? Thank you very much. Would the petitioner please come forward?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chair, Josh Yellen representing the Fecks, who are with us today. This is their home at 208 West Jones Street. Oh, thank you. I don't have anything for this one. Thank you. This site is unique both in terms of the irregularity of the parcel, as was mentioned by staff, and we do appreciate the recommendation for approval, but it's also unique in that they went before HDBR in June of 2024 for this exact carriage house, and it was recommended for approval by HDBR. It was deemed visually compatible and appropriate. They, in fact, also then submitted for building permits, which were granted by the City of Savannah and then later revoked by the City of Savannah, as it turned out that this parcel, something happened with the HDBR paperwork where the 40% versus the 56% was not looked at. And so the recommendation to come here for a variance was never made. We're trying to clean that up now, but it has been thoroughly vetted by HDBR and recommended for approval by them for this exact building footprint and configuration that you're seeing before you. The site is unique. It's two non-conforming parcels side by side. One's a kind of remnant parcel. They're trying to make it usable for a single family home with an ADU. The size is necessary. It's really the minimum to put in a two-car garage below. They can't get much smaller than what they're working with. And so we do appreciate the staff recommendation of support. We appreciated the recommendation of approval from HDBR over a year ago, and we appreciate your approval today of the same. Thank you all.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the petitioner? Thank you very much. Mr. Paul Corbett, would you like to come up and say anything?
Good morning. My name is Paul Corbett. I'm the president of the Downtown Neighborhood Association. We oppose the petition that would permit a proposed ADU at 208 West Jones Street to exceed the permitted maximum square footage. The variance would increase the allowable footprint from the permitted 40% to 56.7%, resulting in a footprint of 562.47. You heard that from staff. As noted in the staff report, the architectural design of the proposed ADU was reviewed and approved at HDBR back in June of 2024. The design presented back then was determined to be visually compatible with the landmark district. The approval of the HDBR was specifically based on a review of a structure that had a square footage of less than 40%. What is being proposed here today is a structure that's substantially larger than what was reviewed, an increase of over 43%, resulting in coverage exceeding 56%. This design change requires a review at HDBR to ensure that the project revised remains visually compatible. We also object to the variance on the basis that the redesigned structure will not satisfy the conditions that must be met in order to grant a variance. Under the standards established by the ordinance, the ADU would be limited to approximately 396 square feet, which is the size of the ADU that was originally proposed by the petitioner and was therefore considered to be adequate at that time. There's no indication of why their initial determination has changed, and we believe that other ADUs with a similar footprint exist within the historic district. Staff contends that limiting size of the proposed ADU to what the ordinance requires may, quote, pose limitations for a two-story structure on a constrained historic lot. There's no evidence for that conclusion, and it flies in the face of what was originally proposed and was proposed to and approved by HDR back in June of 2024. The petition should be rejected, and at a minimum, the petitioner should be required to resubmit the plan being proposed here today back to HDBR to determine if it still meets the visual compatibility requirement. Thank you for allowing us to comment.
Thank you very much.
Yes, sir, Josh Gillen. I just want to correct part of the record. There have been absolutely zero changes to this plan since it was submitted to HDBR in 2024. Part of the errors that occurred from then until now was how the square footage was measured, but the plans are exactly the same. The facts have not modified the proposal. The ADU is the exact same proposal as was thoroughly reviewed in 2024 by HDBR staff. We have not made any changes.
I think Mr. Conant has a question.
Yes, sir.
Sorry, troubles with the buttons over here. The square footage is the same as has been approved.
Correct.
There is no change.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah. And I will also mention part of the reason that I'm involved with this petition was because of outreach that came to me from the two immediately adjacent neighbors. They both submitted letters of support for this petition. They supported it in 2024, and they remain in support now and have confirmed that support in letters that were submitted to this board.
Thank you. All right, we'll enter into board discussion now. Mr. Ball, do you have anything you'd like to say?
Not at this time.
Mr. Plunk?
No, sir.
Mr. Condon?
No, sir.
Mr. Turner?
No.
Mrs. Jones?
No.
Mr. Griffith?
No.
Someone care to make a motion?
I'll motion that we approve staff recommendation.
All right, Mr. Plunk has made a motion to accept staff recommendations of approval. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Ball. Any discussion on the motion? Mrs. Jones, how do you vote?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Mr. Griffin?
Yes.
Mr. Condon?
Yes.
Mr. Turner?
Yes.
Mr. Ball?
Yes.
All right, the motion passes and the requested variance is approved. Next, we're going to hear 4 East Anderson Street, variance to lot size to establish ADU in a TR2 zoning district. 25-004702.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. This is Sadie Sorrent with Development Services, talking about a parcel on East Anderson Street. So the petitioner is requesting a variance to reduce the minimum lot size required to establish an accessory dwelling unit from 3,750 square feet to 3,390 square feet in the TR2 zoning district. Here is the parcel on an aerial map, which you can see is currently vacant. It's located in the Benjamin Van Clark Park neighborhood. Like I mentioned, it's zone TR2, and it is a conforming parcel in the zoning district, and it has lane access. So the petitioner is proposing to build a primary dwelling with a building footprint of approximately 1,200 square feet and an ADU with a building footprint of about 480 square feet. The lot is not large enough to put an ADU by right. Additionally, the proposed ADU meets all other requirements like setbacks, heights, and off-street parking requirements as well, as indicated by the petitioner. So the petitioner is requesting the variance from Section 874B, which requires it to be the lot to be 125% to establish an ADU. Additionally, I'd like to mention, as mentioned in previous meetings, there is an upcoming text amendment that would change, if approved, would change the requirement of having 125% of the minimum lot area to establish an ADU to 100%. So in the future, if that text amendment were to be passed, this variance would not be necessary as it would be permitted by right. Moving forward, the requested variance is generally consistent with the intent of the ordinance, as it is a standard that may be varied where the DBA deemed appropriate in addition to the text amendment. And then here's a proposal from the petitioner, here's the lot, and then here's the proposed primary dwelling, single family, and then behind it in the rear would be the proposed ADU. So with that said, MP staff recommends approval of the requested variance. Happy to answer any questions.
First question I've got, you know, these come up all the time and y'all always mention it. I'm glad that they're proposing a text amendment and mulling that over. We've been talking about that for a long time. Where are we at with moving that forward?
It's on the agenda for next Tuesday's MPC meeting, actually, on the 28th.
At which time they will make a recommendation to council and it'll go through.
Correct.
That way. Okay. Anybody have any questions for staff? All right. Thank you very much. Would the petitioner please come forward? State your name for the record.
Morning. My name is Victor Plusnik, VP2 Design.
Morning.
As far as the ADU goes, again, this is a conceptual that we're proposing just in order to see if we can have the ADU acceptable. As I didn't know about the, but this has been in the discussions about allowing the 125%, but anyhow, that would be an interesting thing. But anyhow, as far as this property goes, again, it's just proposed. The site plan itself is very conceptual. So all the design work to accommodate parking, et cetera, will be considered once, if we do get the approval, that would all be taken into account for the design of the structures.
Okay. Does anyone have any questions for the petitioner? All right. Thank you very much, sir.
Anytime.
I don't have any speaker cards for this petition, so we'll enter into board discussion.
I filled out speaker cards.
That's the one you took off the table, Sally. That's all right. Okay, Mr. Paul Neal, would you like to say something?
Yes, thank you so much. I have a couple questions from looking at the design and so forth. I don't understand. There's an existing unit there that's a duplex. Is that being modified to be a single ADU, or is that staying as a duplex?
That's a different subject.
Pardon?
We're not talking about the same location. There's two East Anderson Street locations on there.
Oh, there's two East Andersons?
Mr. Conlon, can you turn on your microphone?
I'm sorry. Because this
there's two separate East Anderson locations. That's your confusion.
That's why I didn't come up.
So then, there's no one to speak. We'll enter into board discussion. Mr. Griffith, do you have anything you'd like to say?
I do not.
Mr. Jones? Mr. Turner?
No, sir.
Mr. Condon?
No, sir.
Mr. Plunk?
No, sir, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Ball?
No.
Someone care to make a motion?
A motion we grant petitioner's request.
All right, Mr. Plunk has made a motion to grant the request for variance. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Turner. Is there any discussion on the motion? Mr. Ball, how do you vote?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Mr. Condon?
Yes.
Mr. Turner?
Yes.
Mrs. Jones?
Yes.
Mr. Griffith?
Yes.
All right, motion passes, and the requested variance is approved. Next, we're going to hear 1401 East 48th Street, variance to reduce lot size to establish ADU and lot coverage in RSF6 Zoning District 25-004580.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to recuse myself.
All right, Mr. Turner, thank you.
Okay. This is for 1401 East 48th Street. The first variance is similar to the previous request. So the petitioner is requesting a variance to reduce the minimum lot size required to establish an accessory dwelling unit from 7,500 square feet to 6,300 square feet in the RSF6 zoning district. Additionally, through the process of writing the staff report, MPC staff identified a second variance to increase the lot coverage from 40% to 40.6%. Here is the existing subject property. As you can see, here is the primary dwelling and an existing accessory structure on left and rear of the property. That's located in the Parkside neighborhood. Additionally, it's in the Parkside Conservation District. They received a recommendation letter from HPC, which was on the consent agenda on the September 24th meeting. The property is an RSF6 and it is a conforming parcel in the zoning district. Additionally, it has lane access. So the primary dwelling on the property was built in about 1945 and has a building footprint of a bit over 1,600 square feet. As mentioned, there is an existing accessory structure in the rear of the property with a building footprint of 380 square feet that is to remain. The petitioner is proposing to build an additional accessory structure to be an ADU to the right of that existing accessory structure, and that is proposed to be 522 square feet. Similar to the last petition, this lot is not large enough to establish an ADU by right, but it meets all of the requirements. It shows the height of the ADUs being 18 feet and 4 inches, which is 1 foot lower than the existing primary dwelling. So they're requesting a variance from section 874B of the zoning ordinance for lot area to establish an ADU. But as mentioned, there is an upcoming text amendment that would change this requirement. So if this were to move forward, they would meet that 100%. Additionally, MPC staff identified another variance that may be needed with the proposal. Basically, in the tax assessor, it showed the building footprint as 1,617 square feet, 1,657 square feet with an additional slab porch with roof. And then in the petitioner's documents, it shows the building footprint as having 40 square feet less. So following the tax assessor, it would bring the total combined lot coverage, which means the building footprint of the primary dwelling, the existing accessory structure and the proposed ADU would bring it just over the permitted lot coverage of 40%, would bring it to 40.6%, which is why this is an added variance to this. And this is just showing the petitioner's documentation and then the building coverage as required by the zoning ordinance. So the first requested variance is consistent with the zoning ordinance as it may be varied by the ZBA. However, the identified lot coverage variance is not consistent as it is not a hardship. Here is the proposal from the petitioner, just showing the site plan portion. So the existing house, the existing accessory structure, and then the proposed ADU to the right of that. So with that, MPC staff recommends approval of the variance request for the minimum lot size to establish an ADU. However, given there is no hardship, MPC staff recommends denial of the identified variance as the petitioner can reduce the size of the ADU to meet that standard.
Are there any questions for staff? Thank you very much. Would the petitioner please come forward?
Good morning, Chairman, Board. It's good to be here today. I'm Paula Chrysler. I'm the owner of the lot and the structures there. And so the big picture, what I want to do is build an ADU in the backyard. I initially started with wanting to tear down the accessory structure, but that was a no, was not able to do that. So then building the ADU to the east was the plan. And so, and I do have three letters from my neighbors right to the east, to the south, which is right behind me on the lane and across the street, across 48th Street, all approving this ADU. And so the long story short is that eventually as a retiree now, I plan to actually move into the ADU and rent out the home long-term lease on the home. So that's the plan.
Thank you very much. Any questions for the petitioner? All right. You got one, Mr. Coleman, please. Go ahead.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Do you have a problem shrinking the building ever so slightly?
Actually, my architect does have he said, I put it on a diet. So he took a foot off the north side and which is 20 feet this way, and then around the 32 foot length this way, not quite a foot. So yes, he did. I have that.
That'll get you to your 40%.
Correct.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
That's done 1%. You know, I don't think that that's a make them shrink their little building. It's already small.
Is that the smallest percentage-wise we've ever seen for a variance? 0.6%.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to mention that in board discussion.
All right.
It's like a record for me, yeah.
Yeah. Thank you very much, ma'am.
I would say that I would love to have the 40.67 variance as well. Thank you.
So there's no one to speak concerning this, but we'll enter into board discussion. And yeah, I'd like to – I'll start board discussion with – I think we ought to give her the – that's 0.6% so she can put it back like she actually wanted it. It seems very insignificant. Mr. Ball, would you like to add anything?
I agree with you. I think I'm comfortable with granting both variances.
Mr. Plunk?
Yeah, it seems to me that if you built something this, not even, you know, staff would probably not even say something if they measured something at 40.6%.
Mr. Condon?
I'm good with it.
Hey, Mr. Condon, do you have anything you want to add?
Nope.
Mrs. Jones?
I'm good with it. It's not that much difference.
All right. Would someone like to make a motion?
I make a motion that we approve both variance requests.
All right. Mr. Condon has made a motion to approve both requested variances. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Plunk. Any discussion on the motion? Mr. Ball, how do you vote?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Mr. Condon?
Yes.
Mr. Turner? Mrs. Jones?
Yes.
And Mr. Griffith?
Yes.
All right. Motion passes and both variances are approved. Next, we're going to hear 1125 East 48, relief from nonconformity and reduction of rear yard setback for accessory structure, 25-004397.
Okay, so at 1125 East 48th Street, the petitioner is requesting the following two variances in association with expanding a nonconforming accessory structure in the RSO 6 zoning district. One, relief from nonconformity, and two, to reduce the yard setback of the accessory structure from 5 feet to 2 feet and 6 inches. Here's an aerial image showing the primary dwelling and then the tree covering. You can't quite see the accessory structure in the rear, but we'll show more photos later. So this is located in the Parkside neighborhood and Parkside Conservation District. The subject property is about 6,300 square feet and is a conforming parcel in RSF6. The parcel does have lane access as well. The primary dwelling was built in about 1945 and has a building footprint of just over 1,700 square feet. The accessory structure on the property that currently exists was built in or about 1990, which is before the current ownership. And it has a building footprint of approximately 160 square feet, and it is currently existing nonconforming in regards to the rear and then western side interior yard setbacks. The rear yard setback has is 2 feet and 6 inches where 5 feet is required, and then the side yard setback is 1 foot and 10 inches where 5 feet is required. The petitioner is proposing to expand this accessory structure 4.5 feet to the east, which would allow room in the accessory structure to fit a vehicle. And additionally, the addition will align the encroachment with the rear yard setback. And notably, the petitioner will be knocking down just two of the walls, the accessory structure for the addition. So for these two variances, because it's an existing nonconformity, they need relief from nonconformity to expand it. And then because they will be furthering that rear yard setback, they're not going to encroach further, but they will align it with the existing encroaching rear yard setback is why they need that variance as well. They are not consistent with the intent of the zoning ordinance. However, the accessory structure was built prior to the adoption of the current development standards, and the addition will only be minorly adding on to the existing nonconformity versus reconstructing the structure entirely. So here is a good view of it. So this is the side yard setback that's currently encroaching, and then this is the rear setback that's encroaching. They're going to be adding on in the eastern direction 4.5 feet, and it'll be aligning with that encroaching rear yard setback as well. And then here is what's existing and what's proposed. So MPC staff recommends approval of the requested two variants with the condition to install gutters to divert runoff from the adjoining property and the lane. Happy to answer any questions.
So that is obviously on the lane for the rear yard setback, but is there any reason that
couldn't move west to meet with the standards for the side yard setback?
Well, that would, so I think the idea of it is instead of like reconstructing the structure entirely, they're just going to be knocking down two of the walls to expand. So if they were to reconstruct the entire structure, they would be asked to meet the current development standards. So I think it's that distinction of reconstruction versus just adding on to it.
Okay. Thank you very much. Any other questions for staff? All right. Thank you. Would the petitioner please come forward?
Good morning.
Morning.
I'm Ashley Field. I'm the agent for the owners of the property. The only thing I wanted to add was the only reason that they have asked to move this property to the east, it borders the fence on the west. If we move it to the east, just a small amount, they can actually fit a car in this garage because right now you cannot, and it would alleviate them from parking on the street in front of the house. And when they travel for work and other things, they really don't like to leave their car out front. So that's the only object of this encroachment into your setbacks.
Thank you. Is there any questions for the petitioner? Thank you very much. There's no public speaker cards for this one, so we'll enter into board discussion. Mr. Griffith, do you have anything you'd like to say?
No.
Mrs. Jones?
No.
Mr. Turner?
No.
Mr. Condon?
No, sir.
Mr. Plump?
No, sir.
Mr. Ball?
No, sir.
All right. Would someone care to make a motion?
Motion that we grant petitioner's request with the condition provided by staff.
Second.
All right. Mr. Plump has made a motion to grant the requested variances as recommended by staff. It's seconded by Mr. Condon. Is there any discussion on the motion? Mr. Ball, how do you vote?
Yes.
Mr. Plump?
Yes.
Mr. Condon?
Yes.
Mr. Turner?
Yes.
Mrs. Jones?
Yes.
Mr. Griffith?
Yes.
All right. Motion passes and the variances are approved. Next, we're going to hear 616 and 618 West 37. Variances to lot width to establish two family structures and lot size to establish ADU 25-004779.
Okay. At 616 and 618 West 37th Street, the petitioner is requesting the following two variances in association with the recombination of two lots and the construction of a two-family dwelling and an accessory dwelling unit in the TR1 zoning district. So the first variance request is to reduce the lot width required for a two-family dwelling from 40 feet to 36 feet, and the second is to reduce the lot size required to establish an ADU from 5,625 square feet to 4,959 square feet. Here are the subject properties as they currently exist. They're both vacant. They are located in the Clyde-Bonville Historic District and neighborhood. Both properties measure just under 2,500 square feet with 18 feet of width. And both parcels are currently non-conforming regarding both lot area and lot width in the zoning district, and they do have lane access. The petitioner is proposing to recombine the lots into one parcel. So they'll have a combined lot area of just short of 5,000 square feet and a lot width of 36 square feet. The parcel, once recombined, would be conforming in the Tier 1 zoning district for a single-family structure. However, per the request, it would be non-conforming regarding lot width for a two-family structure. So on the lot width, on the new lot, they would be proposing the two-family or duplex and an ADU. So for their first variance request, it requires 20 feet of width per unit, so 40 feet in total. They would be 4 feet short of that with the combined parcel. And the second, for establishing the ADU, they need, once again, that 125% from the standard. So these variances are not consistent with the intent of the zoning ordinance. There's a section of the ordinance 11.5.3.A, which says that if there are two or more adjoining lots that have the same frontage and have the same ownership, they can be treated as one lot without needing to recombine. So this is essentially saying that without having to recombine, the owners could build a single family dwelling and an ADU by right. And it's viewed as one buildable lot. So they could do a single family dwelling and an ADU by right without requesting any variances. Here is the proposal from the petitioner, proposing to recombine these with the duplex in the front and the ADU in the rear. But as mentioned, since a single family dwelling and ADU can be built by right, MPC staff recommends denial of their requested variances. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions for staff? Thank you very much. Would the petitioner please come forward?
Good morning. Once again, Josh Yellen, this time representing 1809 Windsor Road with the request, which is two variances to build a duplex at this location and then a second variance in order to build an ADU. I'd like to thank staff for their work on this petition. We do just want to walk through both this area and the context because we do believe that both variances are warranted and necessary. This is the current site. It has been chopped up into two 18-foot lots. Not sure how that subdivision was approved or why it was approved with the large lot adjacent. At one point, this entire area had a hotel on site. There was residences here, residences here, ADUs, 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 ADUs. This was very common for the area. When we look at the context for the area, this is the property. We're trying to remove the nonconformity and get the variance to put a duplex here. Whether it was a duplex or a single family home, this site would still have to adhere to the standards of the Cuyler-Brownsville Conservation District. So it's not affecting visual compatibility. It's not affecting lot square footage. It's not affecting setbacks. This is simply a question of whether we want three units or two units. And we believe that based upon the context and based upon the need in the city of Savannah for additional housing, that three units are warranted. When you look at the sites surrounding us, and I'm sorry for the double font here, we have numerous sites that are duplexes. We have numerous sites that are duplexes on nonconforming lots. We have numerous lots that are 31 feet, 31 feet, 31 feet, 31 feet. We're asking for 36 feet here. On this side, we have 25-foot lots. The context of the area fully supports a 36-foot wide lot with a duplex and an ADU. We were not trying to reinvent the wheel and not trying to do anything out of the ordinary here, but we were trying to put two 18-foot lots back together to reestablish some of the precedent for this area and to add additional housing units where we know that we need them in the city of Savannah. For the concern that, yes, a single-family home could be built here by right, I don't disagree with that. There is that provision in the ordinance, and that was, in fact, the provision in the ordinance that for the first application today for the FECs, that's what they were forced to utilize to build a single-family home. However, in this context and with the surroundings, we are looking to increase the density here above and beyond by one unit. There's adequate parking available. There is the space available for it, and the context does support adding this additional unit. So we would respectfully request your support for the variance to recombine the two 18-foot lots to reduce it by 4 feet in order to allow a duplex, and then also to permit an ADU to provide that additional dwelling unit on site. And we are happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Mr. Yellen, that Sanborn map, what year is that right there?
So this one, I forget if this was the 1955 or the 19. I have both of them, which is why I'm confused by which one is which. One was from 55, and I also have the one from 1935. And so what you're seeing as shown as the motel there, I have photos of it as well. That was the Poinsettia Inn, which was a tourist accommodation. The site at the corner on, I forget if it's Burroughs or Klein, as you go west on 37th, was also a boarding house. So there was a lot of density at one point in this area. The site has been chopped up. It's very hard to tell by the lot lines whether the hotel was on the property we're discussing today or on the immediately adjacent property. That was the context where we see the motel. And there's an updated Sanborn map on, I have more copies. I'm sorry about that. Wasn't trying to hide that. So on the second page is, I believe, the prior Sanborn map from 1935. And then what you're seeing on the screen, I want to say, was the update from 1955. And this is where it shows 616, 618. 620. But we are seeing a lot of density. We are seeing a lot of accessory dwelling units and a lot of housing on this block.
Does anyone have any questions for Mr. Yellen? Mr. Condon, go ahead.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Parking.
Yes, sir.
How would they take care of parking?
Do you want to speak to that? Okay. Sorry, I'm going to bring up Ryan, who is the applicant.
Yep, Ryan Jennings, and we plan to park from the lane off street.
So you enter the parking from the lane onto the property?
That's right.
So you, how many parking spaces will be accommodated on the property?
Yeah, two. Minimum.
Okay. And those will be for the people that live in the house?
Yes, sir.
It's a total of 3 units then, correct?
Yes.
Thank you.
Any other questions for the petitioner?
Thank you.
Sadly, there's no speaker cards for this one. All right, well, we'll enter into board discussion. Mr. Griffith, do you have anything you'd like to say?
No.
Mrs. Jones?
No.
Mr. Turner?
No, sir.
Mr. Condon?
My only concern is the parking. You know, this is West 37th Street. There's no parking on West 37th Street.
Sure.
Absolutely. Can't park in the lane. And if you're going to have 3 units, it's one thing. If you have 2 units, you can accommodate that in the 2 parking spaces in the garage. I think it's a lot, you know, given the current circumstance in that neighborhood and the development and so on.
It seems that 36 feet, 3 cars would fit back there.
I think you could require that if you so desire to make a motion to approve that it hinges on having 3.
Is Caitlin still here?
Since you were looking for Caitlin as well, I was going to say the same thing, that this still has to go through design review. So understand the concern. What we were showing you on the proposed plan was simply how it could lay out. If that ADU needs to be shifted in one direction or the other to actually put a driveway in to accommodate the parking, that's something that, you know,
that's my only thing, Josh.
Yes. I think that would be addressed both through the COA process and then through the site plan review. But we know we have to fit the 2 parking spaces on. As was mentioned from the prior petitions, the city is looking to get rid of this ADU lot area requirement, which is one of our variances we're requesting. So I think that we can fully address the parking issue as it moves forward.
So I have a question from Ms. Caitlin.
Mr.
Connor has a question for you.
Good morning. Hello, Caitlin Chamberlain with Historic Preservation.
Thank you so much for coming back. On this particular property, they're requesting that you'd have the duplex in the front and then a ADU unit in the back with the 2-car garage under, which is 2 parking spaces. Do you foresee any difficulty if we request that they provide a driveway that have to slide the footprint of the ADU possibly? My concern in that neighborhood is that, you know, there is no parking on West 37th Street. There is no parking in the lane. I'm not exactly sure if you don't provide a parking spot for the person that you're renting to, how exactly they're going to accommodate 3 families or even 3 single people. You know, living there. Do you see an issue with that?
I mean, I wouldn't see it. I think that there's just the driveway standard where it has to be a ribbon strip driveway and there's a certain width. But, you know, if that's something they needed to do, it's not allowed. So.
Okay, so it's permissible.
Yes.
For them to put a driveway in.
Mr. Yellen, we're in board discussion. We'll call you back if we want to have any more information.
So. Thank you so much.
Yep, not a problem.
You know, Brad, my concern with this is if we shrink down this, you've got a 36 foot wide lot. To get a 2-car garage on there, you know, probably. I think they could probably squeeze it. You know, this is of course just a suggestion. What's appearing on our screens right here. I think that they could squeeze it to get a driveway down the side of it and still accommodate a 2-car garage in there. Do you agree?
Yeah, and there's a curb cut showing in the picture now if they were to shift that. On the other hand, again, it's 36 feet wide. If they put a 5-foot setback plus a 20-foot ADU, you still have 11 feet. That's parking space based on a large car.
Yeah, I agree with you. All right. Mr. Yellen, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. You want to ask Mr. Yellen something else?
Please. Go ahead.
Yes, sir.
Do you have a problem if we require you to provide a third parking space?
It's fine. Yep. Got a thumbs up. And we were having the same conversation that y'all were having about we do think it's possible to provide that third space for the ADU.
Perfect. Yep. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, I just want to state that the the traffic engineering department at the city does have their own dimensional standards for driveways, which usually includes a 3-foot side setback for a lot that's this wide. And so actually 1-foot side setback and then a 12-foot wide driveway width. And so I have a little bit of concern that if there's a condition that there's a third parking space required and it has a conflict with the traffic engineering standards, we end up not being able to approve a permit.
John, what we're saying effectively is that you need 14 feet for a driveway, 3 feet for a setback, 11 feet for a driveway.
For a lot less than 45 feet wide, it can be a 1-foot side setback, but then a 12-foot driveway pad, so 13 feet. Yes.
They have a 3-foot in that zoning district. They have a 3-foot side setback on the garage.
That's right.
So if we have a 20-foot garage, we get 23 feet and 13 feet. We're there. Does that make sense?
No. That sounds right.
No. Yeah. And I understand traffic has to approve it. Yep. But we're trying to, you know, yep, obviously accommodate a couple of things going here. And I greatly appreciate your input on this.
Absolutely.
And, yeah.
And the question. I forget which way we're going. So, Mr. Ball, I've already talked to you.
I think I've already piped in. But
okay.
It seems like they can fit the third space, and you know the math we just did, they wouldn't need to come back for variance for the parking space size.
Mr. Plunk, you have anything else?
No.
Mr. Condon?
No, sir.
You? Mr. Turner?
No, sir.
Mrs. Jones?
No.
Mr. Griffith?
No.
Someone like to make a motion?
Can we get back and
think this one's yours, buddy?
Yeah, I just want to make sure I say it correctly. Give me 1 second. I make a motion that we approve the two variance requests and add the requirement of a third parking space in the back of the property accessible from the lane.
All right. Mr. Conan has made a motion to approve the two requested variances with the condition that three parking spaces, off-street parking spaces, will be provided. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Plunk. Is there any discussion? All right. Mr. Griffith, how do you vote?
Yes.
Mrs. Jones?
Yes.
Mr. Turner?
Yes.
Mr. Condon?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Mr. Ball?
Yes.
All right, motion passes, and the variances are approved with conditions. Next, we're going to hear 203 Mall Boulevard. This is a signed variance in BC Zoning District 25-004752.
Okay, this is at 23 Mall Boulevard. The petitioner is requesting a variance to reduce the distance of three above canopy signs from the outer edge of the canopy from 1 foot to 0 feet on a restaurant on the BC Zoning District. Here is the current parcel. It's located in the Avalon / Oglethorpe Mall area. It has a square footage about almost 27,000 square feet and it's zoned BC. A restaurant, namely Kava, was recently constructed on the site with a building footprint of about 2,800 square feet. So it's already constructed, and they are requesting a variance to install three signs above the canopy, two of which say Kava and one says pickup. So in the zoning ordinance in section 9.9.11, it says that the canopy signs shall not be less than 1 foot from the outer edge of the canopy or awning, and they're requesting relief from that to put it flush with the edge of the canopy. This is a self-imposed hardship based on the configuration of the canopy, which is a hardship nonetheless. As I'll show in some photos below, there are tension cables that secure the wooden trellis slats so that they're placed only 9 inches between the tension cables and the edge of the canopy. And staff believes that moving the tension cables would likely compromise the structural integrity of the canopy. So here's the canopy as it exists, and this shows that 9-inch distance, which would not allow them to be able to put those signs with that 1 foot setback from the edge of the canopy, and they're requesting for it to be flush with the outer edge of the slats. Additionally, here are the plans for the signs, just to give more demonstration. On the southeast side, it'll have the Kava sign and the pickup sign, and then the southwest, it'll have this Kava sign as well, and then this is just more information on the sign specifics of it. So given the hardship, MPC staff does recommend approval for the requested variance.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for staff? Great. Thank you very much. Would the petitioner please come forward? Is the petitioner here? Are they online?
No. Yes, sir.
Thank you. I'm here. Sorry, I just got unmuted. Good morning, Chairperson and members of the board. My name is Erica Perez with Jones Sign Company, and I'm here today on behalf of Kava, located at 203 Mall Boulevard, to respectfully request a variance from the City of Savannah Sign Ordinance regarding canopy signage setbacks. The current ordinance requires canopy signs to be set back 12 inches from the edge. We are requesting a variance to allow our signage to be installed flush with the edge of the canopy at a 0-inch setback, which we believe is not only appropriate for this location, but also enhances the visual appeal and functionality of the site. The building's design and canopy structure naturally lend themselves to a flush-mounted sign. A 12-inch setback would disrupt the visual alignment and diminish the sign's visibility, especially for pedestrians and drivers approaching from key sight lines. A flush installation ensures the sign complements the architecture and communicates clearly to the public. The canopy's design and structural layout make a 12-inch setback impractical. A setback would cause the sign to appear misaligned and partially obscured, reducing its visibility and effectiveness. Installing the sign flush with the edge allows it to integrate seamlessly with the canopy and maintain a clean, professional appearance. The proposed signage meets all other safety and dimensional requirements. It does not extend beyond the canopy, does not interfere with pedestrian clearance, and poses no risk to public safety. We've taken care to ensure the design is both attractive and responsible. Several nearby businesses have signage flush with their canopy edges as well, creating a consistent visual rhythm within the area. Granting this variance would align Kava's signage with existing conditions and maintain a cohesive and harmonious look for the area. The proposed signage aligns with Kava's national brand standards, which are carefully developed to ensure consistency across all locations. This consistency is critical for customer recognition and trust, especially for a brand like Kava that relies on visual identity to communicate its values and offerings. We respectfully ask for your support of this variance request for Kava at 203 Mall Boulevard. This modest adjustment will allow us to install signage that is safe, visually appropriate, and beneficial to both the business and the surrounding community. We believe this request aligns with the spirit and intent of the ordinance and appreciate your thoughtful consideration. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the petitioner? Thank you very much, ma'am.
Thank you.
So there's no speaker cards for this either, Sally. All right, we'll enter into board discussion. Mr. Ball, do you want to say anything?
No.
Mr. Plunk?
No.
Mr. Condon?
No, sir.
Mr. Turner?
No.
Mrs. Jones?
No.
Mr. Griffin?
No.
Someone care to make a motion?
I motion to approve the requested variance.
Mr. Turner's made a motion to approve the requested variance. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Condon. Any discussion? Mrs. Jones, how do you vote?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Mr. Griffith?
Yes.
Mr. Condon?
Yes.
Mr. Turner?
Yes.
Mr. Ball?
Yes.
All right, the motion passes and the requested variance is approved. Next, we're going to hear 2001 Ford Avenue, variance to front yard setback and relief from nonconformity, 25-007454.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and the members of the board. My name is Subhashi Karunaratna, and I'll be presenting the staff findings and recommendation for 2001 Ford Avenue. Here, the petitioner is requesting an after-the-fact variance from the required 20-foot front yard setback in RSF5 zoning district. This request is here because there is an existing structure, and the owner has gone forward to renovate the structure and add another section to the existing building. And now the total structure is in the 20-foot front yard. As you can see here, this is the addition that is 132.9 square feet. And the structure that existed was built in 1940, and it encroaches the side yards and the front yards. So that's a nonconformity. This right here is the current status of it. They've added a section here and also this section here. If you see these photos, you can see that the front door is not exactly facing the street. It is towards the side, and that remains the same even with the renovations. So, and it's also in the flood zone. So there are several things, in the zoning ordinance that the applicant need to consider during this construction. Since the structure is already built and for similar situated structures, there will be no other way to go by this. The staff recommends approval because this is an existing hardship. I'll be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
So this was built with a building permit?
Yes, and they got a stop order after this addition was made.
After what was made?
This addition.
Okay.
So this is where they stopped.
But they had to submit the plans to get the permit. Is that correct?
This work was done prior to the application for a building permit. The building permit is after the fact.
So the building permit is also after the fact. Okay. All right. Any questions for staff? All right. Thank you very much. Would the petitioner please come forward?
Good morning again, Victor Plusnik. 2001 Ford Avenue. The permitting process is right now dependent on the zoning. We're about to submit for the permit. The owner had done a bit of renovation pre-permit and did get a stop work order and is now trying to complete the project that's been standing for quite some time now. But the front portion is within the setback, and there are the issues on the floodplain that we went ahead and got the survey all put together as per recommendations from zoning board. And at this point, we're just looking to get the nonconformity approval and move forward.
Well, I got to know, how did they possibly start a renovation of that magnitude without first getting a building permit?
When I got involved in this, it was just a kind of a sketch that was handed in, and it was not really any drawing wise. It wasn't really, let's just say, substantial.
Yeah, but what did the sketch have to do with not applying for the building permit?
I think the owner was confused. He didn't feel it, just an addition that he'd need a permit. But then once he got the stop work order, that's when I got involved on that.
Any questions for petitioner? All right. Thank you very much. Sally, no speakers for this one? All right. Well, Mr. Griffith?
No.
Mrs. Jones?
No.
Mr. Turner?
No, sir.
Mr. Condon?
No.
Mr. Plunk?
No.
Mr. Ball?
No.
Someone like to make a motion?
I motion that we accept staff recommendation for approval.
Mr. Plunk has made a motion to accept staff recommendation for approval. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mrs. Jones. Is there any discussion on this motion? Mr. Griffiths, how do you vote?
Yes.
Mrs. Jones?
Yes.
Mr. Turner?
Yes.
Mr. Condon?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Mr. Ball?
Yes.
Okay, motion passes and the requested variance is approved. All right, next we're going to hear 912 East Anderson Street, variances to reestablish non-conforming use and ADU building footprint in TR2 zoning district 25-004727.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the board. This is Edward Morrow, Director of Development Services here at the MPC. This request is for the property at 912 East Anderson Street, and the petitioner is requesting to reestablish a non-conforming use at this property. The property previously contained two-family primary dwellings. One of these two-family dwellings still exists on the property, and so this present request is for the purpose of reestablishing the one that is no longer present. We have aerial imagery showing the two structures on the property together as recently as 2004. You can see the subject properties that currently exist on your screen right now, with the existing smaller of the two structures that is adjoining the lane there. In looking at staff's findings on this, the subject property is about 6,840 square feet. It's a 60-by-114 property, zone TR2, and this is a conforming parcel within the zoning district with lane access. There is an existing non-conforming over-under duplex that has a footprint of about 649 square feet. It is non-conforming with regard to its side and rear setbacks. In the absence of the other structure, this became the principal dwelling, and so we would expect that to have 5 feet interior side setbacks, and we would expect it to have a 20-foot rear setback. So again, this is a relatively small principal dwelling in the context of the current development regulations. Again, there's record of a second two-family structure that was present on the parcel up until at least about 2004 when it was demolished. The subject parcel was previously zoned R4 prior to the adoption of NUZO, and this was a zoning district that aimed to create a space for residential dwellings up to 12 units per acre. So NUZO modified that just a bit. We can see here in looking at our development standards, staff calculated that this would require about 9,000 square feet to make it a conforming proposal under the current development standards. In the TR2 here, two-family over-unders require 2,250 square feet per dwelling with 20 feet of lot width per unit. Here we have the Sanborn showing that there were two structures. Indeed, here you can see the two, and also this was a lane dwelling. It was a duplex. And here's that aerial image showing the original structure, which was quite large and placed at the center. In looking at the criteria for reestablishing a non-conforming use, the petitioner is, again, requesting to reestablish it by rebuilding it because it no longer exists, and the building has not subsequently been redesigned because it's no longer there. But most importantly, I'm going to jump down to the general site standards and how they comply with the current ordinance. The parcel is 6,840 square feet. What we would ordinarily anticipate in this context is to have it's sufficient for an over-under duplex with an accessory dwelling unit. That would probably max out this particular parcel under our current regulatory scheme. In order to be conforming, again, this would require 9,000 square feet as proposed. Alternatively, if this were to be proposed as two single-family dwellings with accessory dwelling units, those would require 7,500 square feet. So just trying to square this with what the current regulations would require as opposed to what the petitioner is proposing. And so that 9,000 square feet is what would be required for a group development under the current regulations to place it back as it was previously. Just to show you a view of what the petitioner is requesting here, you can see the newly proposed structure that would go here. Not exactly in the same place as the aerial image. But this would be a duplex. The existing duplex would be retained. You can see there are six parking spaces, two in tandem, that would be proposed for future residents. With that, as the proposal is inconsistent with the intent of the currently adopted development standards, staff does recommend denial of this request, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
So can you go back down to the picture? They're proposing two duplexes, and I see six off-street parking.
That's correct.
Okay. All right. Any other questions for staff?
Good morning, sir.
Yes, sir. How are you?
Would it be possible for these guys to do a text amendment and rezone the parcel to allow them to do this? My concern is they have a duplex on the property at the moment, and the zoning allows them to build basically an ADU, you know.
Right.
It doesn't really allow for us to go from an ADU to a duplex.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty big, is there an alternative to this for them, potentially?
Unfortunately, I would say there isn't. If a rezoning were requested, this would definitely be a spot zoning. However, we are presently looking at our comprehensive plan, updating that, and typically there are recommendations for modifying the zoning ordinance. I will say, in looking at this, NUZO did take a step forward under the previous zoning. The same request would have required a bit more, several more thousand square feet to accomplish. And so NUZO brought that down to 9,000. But obviously there was a time where the development pattern in the city permitted a bit more intermixing of housing types and a little bit more density. So a broader scale approach would be advisable, more so than just a spot rezoning.
Any other questions for staff?
So they could remove one of the units from the two-unit ADU and then build the duplex?
Structurally, I'm not quite sure that could be accomplished. Theoretically, perhaps. There's nothing preventing the demolition of the ADU so that this could be a blank slate and they could do a conforming single-family dwelling with an ADU. I'm sorry, a duplex, if I'm not mistaken.
A conforming duplex with an ADU.
Yes, a conforming over-under duplex, right. This is not historic. They could, demolish the existing duplex.
They could eliminate one unit and make it storage, or they could tear the whole thing down. But right now there's two small units there.
That is an alternative, sure.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Seems a little bit of a shame, but.
Any other questions for staff? All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Mark. Would the petitioner please come forward?
Morning.
Morning.
Thanks for being with us today. My name is Brent White. I'm with Evolution Design, and I'm here on behalf of Ms. Fass, the owner. You can see from the photos that that this property is a critical link in our fabric, and right now it's kind of a missing link. It's a void. The existing ADU is set back in the property, and it's a piece that I think the city deserves to repair. We've been working with the community, MPC, zoning administration to reestablish this link, and we want to rebuild the primary structure that was there. We've worked really hard to provide adequate parking, which you can see here. I think we're even a little bit above and beyond what's required to deal with the reality that we can't park on Anderson Street and we have lane access. With that parking, we're proposing that it all be gravel parking so that there's no additional pervious area contributing to some of the flooding issues that we have within the city. And more importantly, we are proposing that the entrance to the new primary over-under be one from the front, fronting Anderson Street, and one from the rear to kind of conceal the fact that this is a duplex. One point that I do want to make is that the proposed accessory dwelling, or the proposed primary structure and its footprint, we've tried really hard to make this footprint relatively small. And because of that and the existing nature of the accessory dwelling unit, we exceed that 40% ratio. And normally it would be the other way around. We would be able to modify what that ratio would be, but we are happy to look at a larger primary structure if that's what the board finds today. But really, we're just here. We were looking for your feedback. And if you think that this isn't ready to be voted on today, or if you think a continuance is in order, we're happy to hear all those conversations. And the owner is interested in building a new duplex on the front and has her mind set on that. So we're willing to have a conversation and hear your thoughts on what we do with the existing accessory structure. But in a climate where we're looking for housing, we think this is something that's not too imposing. And so we're hoping to have this approved today.
Thank you very much. Any questions for the petitioner? Go ahead, Mr. Condon.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Do you believe that the owner would be opposed to converting the existing duplex into an ADU?
To a single?
Yes.
We've discussed that, and he's more than happy. But as a resident within the city and working closely with Yimby and some other people within the community, I know our housing crisis. And so I think from the city's perspective, I think that would be less desirable, but the owner is more than willing to accept that. Yeah.
You know, my issue is that this is a neighborhood of predominantly single family homes with a spattering of houses that were converted into duplexes over the course of time. You know, I don't think it was the intent of the NUZO to allow quadplexes on single family house lots.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's my issue. The way I look at it is there's currently a duplex on that house lot. And so as a result, the only thing that's really allowed there is an ADU. Well, it would be ridiculous, of course, to put an ADU in the front of the lot.
We're not allowed, yeah.
You know, so I like the idea of putting a nice duplex in front, something that would, you know, add to the neighborhood. But I don't like the idea of having four units on one house lot. So that's you know, sort of my thought process.
Just for my information, is that something that the board could vote on today and say instead of having two units in each, you could vote on that? Okay.
Is there any more questions for the petitioner? Thank you very much.
Yeah.
I think we might have to ask Mr. Morrow, but I think what we're voting on today is the requested variances, not variances that haven't been requested.
What we could do is agree to allow, hold on a second, let me put this thing back up. Could agree to allow them to build a duplex on the front if the rear unit was converted into an ADU.
Yeah, the condition.
That would be the condition of the approval.
Was the primary structure that was on this lot originally back into, was it a duplex back then?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what y'all said?
Mm-hmm.
It's my understanding they would have both been regarded as principal structures, okay. And there would not have – so
a differentiation would not have been made back then.
Right.
There were two primary structure duplexes on this lot.
That's my understanding.
Until one was demolished.
And so I'd just like to add to that point, if that's the direction that this board would like to go to fit this structure in the context of an ADU, it would not currently sort of fit those parameters very well. I think mostly because of the setbacks and the size. So those may be two things. It is greater than 40% in proportion to the structure that is proposed. And so a relief would need to be granted for that particular issue. And also the setbacks, I want to say one is, well, actually both of them closer to the side than they could be. Is the rear at 3 feet? The rear is at 3 feet, which is fine. The side would require side setback relief. And then the floor area. I'm sorry, I'm looking at John just to confirm because he's going to have to sign off.
Yeah, I mean, you can ask for a variance for the 40% footprint standard of the ADU relative to the principal structure. As Mr. White noted, you could just make the principal structure larger and not require that variance. That's kind of applicants, if they want to give indication of what direction they would like the board to go on that. At the end of the day, it's the board's purview. And then in terms of the setbacks, it's an existing nonconforming structure with an existing nonconforming dwelling. So, well, actually, the use is conforming. So if they just wanted to convert the ground floor of that existing structure to a storage area, that would just be a building permit. We wouldn't require a variance for that for any setbacks.
Any more questions for the petitioner? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Got one member of the public that wants to speak, Mr. Paul Neal.
Yes. Thank you for allowing me to come again. I don't know how much you take in regard to visual as well as other things when you're doing a variance. And as the commissioner said, there's a duplex on the back lot right now. I live next door to that lot. And it's single family homes, that whole street. And they're basically homes that are historical. And the house right next door to it was built with the provision that it is a historical reconstruction for tax purposes. My building is 100 years old building. So the whole street is on that side is single family homes in the front that are historical. And all the parking in that lane comes off the lane during the entire spot. Now, I have a side porch where I enter my house. Basically, my house loses an incredible value by having to look at a parking lot where they have all those cars situated. Do you mind if I have a couple pictures that I could show you of the view? Am I allowed to approach?
Sally, bring them.
Okay, so this first picture, I won't know what they are because I can't. Okay, the first picture is the entrance to the side of my house.
Thank you.
Which has a small porch on it. And then this picture is of the lot now coming from my living room and so forth. So the new house would just look into the house and the parking would all be, that's the historical house next door, I think. Okay, this is the view from my porch currently, which would look onto a parking lot and gravel. And that's the historical house on one side of me, I think. And that is, that's the view currently. And one of the pictures is of the house on the other side, which is a historical house also. One picture shows my house and the porch. And so they're asking for a variance to accommodate them while it completely disrupts the value of a house of a retired person next door. And also, I think, disrupts the historical house, which was built with historical, you know, in mind because they restored it. And it takes away the whole lane parking, which is common there for all the houses that are on Henry Street. There's several houses there that are multi-family, and they all have lane parking in the back so you don't disrupt. So it really becomes my house next to like an apartment complex with a parking lot, which I don't think is a proper consideration. And the fact that they have an ADU, which is non-conforming probably once they build another duplex on the property. And then I don't know how, like, he's already kind of dancing around the fact that that probably can't be easily converted to a single family home or an ADU in the back because the entrance is a staircase on the outside going upstairs. It's a cinder block building. And once you start redoing it, it's not going to meet any of the setbacks for the area. So, there's a lot of moving parts in here. And I do not think, although it was also danced around and it was a really good question, that the house in the front was originally a duplex. There's, you know, he said probably, but I think it was a single family home that they converted and just, you know, like they do rooming houses into a duplex. And the idea that, in the past, you know, you had things, the reason that we make new regulations and don't use past regulations, which is one of the arguments, is because we're trying to maintain some type of continuity in our current building and keep Savannah for what it is. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Would a petitioner like to rebut public comment?
So we walked the neighborhood, and clearly Mr. Paul is against the project, and And we've offered to engage in the conversation and figure out how we can make it more favorable to him. But by screening that parking with the fence and making sure that there is parking accommodated, you know, we think that we try to be good neighbors and not make him too imposing of a structure. But I will say that this owner has no issue and is more than willing to remove one of the units in the existing duplex structure. And his preference would be to remove the upper one, which I think would put our setbacks in the range of what's allowable. I think a single family structure in this zoning, a side setback is 3 feet, which is what it is currently. So so if the board finds that that's a reasonable thing, then we'd like to continue with it today. But if you think that we need to rework this package, then we'd love to have a recommendation for us to ask for a continuance.
Thank you.
I was curious if you had considered, I mean, it appears that you could subdivide it and build two single family houses with two ADUs, assuming that this text amendment passes and end up with four units that way. Is that something that has been considered?
Well, I think that's an option, but this owner is trying to be cost conscious and doesn't want to tear down the existing structure that's there. It's something that's a part of our existing fabric and believes that it should stay. But again, we're more than flexible and happy to look at other options.
Yeah, I hate to see any new units torn or existing units torn down, but this one does seem a little problematic. Just wondered if you considered that.
Yeah.
We're going to enter into board discussion. I'd like to see this come back with taking into consideration the comments being made here today and trying to fix this a little bit. But that being said, Mr. Griffith, do you have anything to say?
No.
Mrs. Jones? Mr. Turner?
No.
Mr. Condon?
I agree with you. I think there's a number of areas here that could be improved between now and next month so that it makes it cleaner and easier for everybody. There'll be a more positive sort of response to this thing. So I'm in favor of postponing it.
Mr. Plump?
Yeah, I'm fine with a continuance. Kind of going on what Mr. Baugh is saying, you know, if eventually they're going to be able to kind of reconfigure it to get four units on, you know, you'd almost rather, if they're going to do four units, I'd almost rather be with what's existing there without, you know, tearing it down, because at least you kind of preserve, you know, the development pattern as it was, as opposed to just doing something and trying to squeeze them in. But I'm open to hearing, you know, if this comes back and then kind of reconfigured in some way.
Mr. Ball?
No, nothing new.
Okay. Would someone care to make a motion?
I make a motion that we reschedule this meeting till our next scheduled meeting.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Turner. Is there any discussion? All right, excuse me. Mr. Condon has made a motion to continue this until our next scheduled meeting, at which time we hope to see it with some improvements and having taken in the comments into consideration. It's been seconded by Mr. Turner. Is there any discussion? Mr. Ball, how do you vote?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Mr. Condon?
Yes.
Mr. Turner?
Yes.
Mrs. Jones?
Yes.
And Mr. Griffith?
Yes.
All right. The motion passes and this item will be continued until next month's meeting.
Just from my understanding, the parking is the primary issue or the removing?
Yeah, we probably should give them some specific instructions if we're asking them to come back.
The primary issue is the total number of units and the location of the parking.
Okay, so we would like to see one unit in the rear structure and then address some parking.
And as John, Mr. Agnost had mentioned, you'll want to work a little bit on how you configure the ADU to allow you to not have to have additional variances.
So make the primary structure bigger.
John is fantastic, so I'm sure he'll help you with that information.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. Next, we're going to hear 1313 Staley Avenue. This is an appeal of ZCL 25-004784.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Edward Morrow again here. As you just stated, this is an appeal of a zoning confirmation letter. The appellant, J. Patrick Connell, on behalf of Outpost Homes, LLC, is appealing an August 8th determination of the City of Savannah Zoning Administrator, where the zoning administrator determined that the proposed use for the subject property at 1313 Staley is no longer legal non-conforming, and that the future use should be consistent with the current residential zoning. The appellant argues that the zoning administrator's interpretation was unfair and erroneous, specifically asserting that the principal use of the property is a legal non-conforming commercial warehouse. The city staff previously issued the property owner a home-based business license for this location. And finally, that the approval of a home occupation business license does not change the legal non-conforming status of the commercial use on the property because the ordinance does not expressly preclude such licenses from being issued in association with caretaker dwelling units, such as that the appellant argues was established on the property. The appellant is requesting that the zoning administrator's interpretation be overturned, and that the property's commercial operation be returned to its legal non-conforming status within the RSF 6 zoning district. MPC staff recommends that the decision of the zoning administrator be affirmed and upheld. In looking at some findings that were helpful in our determination, there's a commercial structure on the property that was built in 1974. It's an approximately 8,600 square foot warehouse, according to the Chatham County Tax Assessor. The current property owner, Outpost Homes, obtained the property in March of 2015. So they've had the property now for about 10 years. They obtained it from a Construction Pros of Savannah after their ownership for just approximately 50 days. With regard to the status of the original use of the property, a couple of things were compelling for us. There was a 2014 zoning inquiry that was issued by the city to the owner at that time, and that indicated that the proposed use about which they were inquiring at the time, which was a car sales and repair use, it would not be permitted because the property was zoned for planned residential use. So as of 2014, we are aware that zoning was in conflict with the original use for which this building was constructed. The zoning confirmation letter also indicates some analysis of aerial imagery that indicates the property might have been vacant dating back to as early as 2001. So it's significant to note that under the previous ordinance, a lapse in the use would have actually eliminated any claims of the legal non-conforming status of the use after just 6 months. So the zoning designation of the property was changed from PR6, which was Planned Residential 6, to RSF6, with the adoption of NUZO in September of 2019. So prior to NUZO, it had a RSF6 essentially zoning district that was planned, which meant that the MPC would have had to approve a site development plan for that particular development. And then when NUZO was adopted in 2019, that became the current RSF6 zoning district that we have today. Mr. Miller made application to the City of Savannah for a home occupation business license in September of 2024 to be operated in association with a caretaker dwelling unit on the property per the applicant or the appellant. And it was established in support of the legal non-conforming commercial use. The revenue department is indicated as having established the requested home occupation business tax certificate. This was revoked, and that is one of the issues in regard to this particular zoning confirmation letter. It states that there's no record of building permits for conversion, also of any of the structures for residential occupancy. So it is likely that the petitioner acted without having obtained permits, and the business license was issued erroneously. Again, the zoning confirmation letter indicates that apart from the 2024 license, there were no other tax records for the property between 2014 and 2025. And that's significant because typically one of the means by which we establish a use has been ongoing is that they have an updated record of business licenses. That was not the case for this property, again, as there were no business tax certificates that were issued between 2014 and the 2024 approval for the home occupation business license. To offer you some ordinance basis for this, section 1142E of the ordinance states that a nonconforming use is regarded as abandoned when the use has been discontinued for a period of 12 months regardless of whether the intent is to resume the nonconforming use. That's under the current NUZO standards. Again, there's evidence that this lapsed even under the previous ordinance. Section 12.8 of NUZO offers penalties and remedies to prevent, correct, and abate a violation of the ordinance. Specifically, the reference section here states that a certificate, permit, or other authorization may be revoked for mistake in granting. In essence, if a staff member or a person of authority issues a permit and that permit is issued erroneously, the permit remains invalid. We have had another item on the agenda today to address an erroneous issuance where relief was then requested from this board. So we do go through the process to remedy these situations where there have been erroneous approvals. Section 8.7.11 describes the intent of home occupations as permitting very limited non-residential activity within a residential dwelling or any accessory building accessory to the dwelling, provided that such activity does not detract from nor is incompatible with the surrounding residential uses. Again, if the structure and property in question were, as the appellant has argued, they would be entitled to full commercial use of the property as a legal non-conforming structure in use. And so a home occupation business license would not be necessary or appropriate for operating a full commercial operation, if that makes sense. And so in dispensing of an appeal, this board has several options per Section 323.6. ZBA shall determine whether the first decision maker erred in its application and interpretation. The ZBA may reverse or affirm either wholly or in part, or may modify the final written decision. They may make a motion to reverse, affirm, or modify the final decision appealed. And they must include a statement on the specific reasons, including the proposed findings of fact, that support the decision. If a motion to reverse or modify is not made or such motion fails to receive the affirmative vote of the majority of the members present, then the appeal shall be denied. And finally, the appellant has the burden of proof. In looking at these three items that the appellant has raised as the basis for the request to overturn the zoning administrator's determination, staff found that there were no defects meriting modification of the original determination that was made by the zoning administrator. Again, any potential claim of the nonconforming status of the use of the property lapsed prior to the property owner's 2015 acquisition. Based on the 2014 response, it was clear at that time, as early as 2014, that the original commercial use for the property was at that time invalid. And also, there is an absence of any additional business tax certificate records indicating that there was no ongoing business occurring on this property. Further, the ordinance does state that licenses, certificates, or authorizations issued in error are essentially invalid. Again, this is per subsection D of section 12.8. And finally, if the structure and the commercial use were indeed legal nonconforming, a home occupation business license would not be the appropriate vehicle by which to establish this business. Again, continuous operation is typically evidenced by ongoing occupational and business tax certificate renewal. And as a principal commercial use, it would have been entitled to a business license as though the property was zoned for commercial or industrial use. Expansion would be a different question, but continuation would not require a home occupation business license. Further, viewed in context, a home occupation business license is provided to permit non-residential activity in a very narrow context. Just to offer some insight here, these are uses that are limited to about 25% of the floor area of your dwelling, or a maximum of 500 square feet. This structure was originally built to house approximately 8,600 square feet of activity. So an inappropriate vehicle, again, by which to establish this business. And so, again, MPC staff does recommend that the zoning administrator's determination be affirmed and upheld. And I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Morrow?
Yeah, actually. So I guess there's two items coming up for the same address. I guess there's both an appeal in the decision, and then there's a request for variance, assuming that if we don't overturn the decision, there's already, you know, request for the variance, whereas if we overturn the decision, there wouldn't be a need. Is that what is essentially happening here?
Essentially, a two-pronged approach to reestablish the use.
Makes sense. Thank you, Mr. Morrow. Are there any other questions for Mr. Morrow? All right. Would the petitioner please come forward?
not quite there. So good morning. J. Patrick Connell for the petitioner, Outpost Homes, whose principal, Jason Miller, is here with me today. Mr. Miller, through another LLC, purchased this property. I think it's interesting that we didn't ever see a picture of this property during the staff's presentation here, because the picture's pretty enlightening as to what's going on here in the history of this property. It's really impossible to tell the story of this property without seeing it. So I think y'all ought to see it. You saw a lot of pictures in every other presentation that's come before you today from staff. I don't know why we didn't see one here. So Mr. Moore, with your help, would you pull up my application?
No, my application. You would have seen this next, just so you know, there's a picture there that I took when I went.
Photos. There's a good picture of it. Let me see if I can turn this for you so you can see it better. That one certainly is. This is a commercial warehouse, if I've ever seen one. Now, there does happen to be a residence within it. My client didn't build the residence. And it doesn't occupy 8,000 square feet, as the city would lead you to believe. It is a small portion of it. This hall got tripped up when my client, trying to do the right thing, went to the city to get a business license. Or, well, they're all signed and mumbling to get a business license for a different business, which is a property management business that gets mail. That's it. That's the only reason for the home occupation permit. It was suggested that we could solve the tax assessor's issue by staff that because there was a residence here, he could just get a home occupation permit and then take that over to the tax assessor office and get his business license for the property management company, completely different company from the construction company that has used this as a commercial warehouse for its operation since it purchased it. The city has known all of that. They issued a commercial electrical permit for him. When he bought the property, it was derelict. There were numerous outstanding property violations, ordinance violations. He cleared them all in 3 months, I think. I've got a timeline in our application. Elected officials for the city of Savannah actually came out to look at what a good job he had done and commended him in cleaning it up. He is at all times used it as a warehouse. If we go to Sages, we look at the aerial photos that the city is inclined to tell you that the property has been abandoned in use, which, oh, by the way, aerial photos tell you nothing about what's going on inside of a building because there's a roof between you and the camera. What's going on this property? That's 2017, 2 years after you bought. I could flip through all the others, you'd see the same. I could also take you back to 2008. In 9, 11, and 13, when Miss Betty White owned it, Miss Betty White, I know this personally because I've had a case involved her. We were both on the other side of somebody related to her. She owns a towing yard in Bullitt County, Georgia. And these photographs don't show any storage here. How can you say that the use has been abandoned when you don't know if it's a commercial warehouse, what's going on inside the actual warehouse? What does Miss Betty White have in there? Y'all tell me. Was she using this property at the time based on these aerial photos? I don't think they've met a burden to show that it was abandoned by showing an aerial photograph where you can't tell what she's doing inside of the building. This is a matter of common sense. My client has always used this property for storage for his commercial contractor business. The issue here is that it was built as a warehouse. It is, in fact, a warehouse, but the city has said that they want it to be single family. The problem with that is, be careful what you ask for, because the city's sole enumeration in the denial of our next request on the agenda is that by allowing this property to be what it is, a commercial warehouse, it will have a negative impact on them. Now, granted, it is a non-conforming commercial warehouse. Nobody's asking to expand it. Nobody's asking to change the use. We're just asking for legal recognition that what we're doing there and have been doing all along is a legal non-conforming use. And they're saying that, well, if we do that, if we legally let you do what you've been doing in the building that was built for the purpose of what you're doing, and we verify that by saying it's a legal non-conforming use, it's going to adversely impact the neighborhood, and they're going to tell you how it's going to, I guess, how it's going to adversely impact them if he continues to use the property in the way that he's been using it. That's what they've got to tell you. Okay. Great.
Well, settle down.
That's what they have to tell you. If it isn't determined to be a legal non-conforming use, I think it's 12 acres and it's on RSF6. That's about 72 single-family homes permitted as of right. That's coming right down. We're ready to go. So do what you will. We're ready. Get that property. It's already got funding.
Hold on. Okay. Are there any questions for the petitioner? I said settle down. You'll get your chance to talk in a minute.
Is he talking about having a warehouse? Or I'm not quite understanding what you're saying about that property.
I'm saying that it was built as a warehouse, and it is, in fact, a warehouse, and it has been used as such since my client bought it.
And so you're talking about keeping it as a warehouse. Is that
letting him continue to do what he has been doing there, what he purchased it for legally?
He just wants to keep using it.
One, that it's legal use. It causes a lot of trouble when you get something that from the city that's official that says you're a non-conforming use. It causes problems with banks. It causes problems with real estate. It's an issue. So we want to clear the record. That's all.
City is saying at some point it stopped being an operating warehouse. Okay. And because of that, it can't continue on. He's saying it never stopped. It can't continue because it's not zoned to be a warehouse.
Okay,
so if it ever ceased to be, the city's arguing that it can't continue.
Okay.
But they're arguing that it's always been an operating warehouse. It never stopped being.
Okay.
Yeah, I do have a photograph that shows Miss White, the current owner, using it as for outdoor storage for her business. It's on my laptop. It's from 2008. If you'd like to see it, I'm happy to pull it up if that would influence your decision.
Does anybody need to see that? Are there any other questions for the petitioner?
I think I understand what he's saying.
before we call for public comment. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
Edward, you brought up a good point. Is there, where do you have, other than the lack of proof, is there any proof that it's ceased to be, being in use? Or are you just going by the lack of the documents that you can't find?
It's a really tough question. The lack of 10 plus years, actually in excess of 10 plus years of documentation that you're an ongoing business, it's not a small lack. So the lack of evidence, yes, but also when you look at the aerial imagery, this is just going back to 2013, that you can see. So under the previous ordinance, the nonconformity, the idea is that you were going to continue this for the purpose for which it had been established, right? So you had a legal nonconforming business. This was a tow yard. This was a place where they would bring cars, just based on the definition. They would bring cars. They would sit them here. So you would expect to see cars that were outside, right? That's the nature of the business that was going on. At the point that we ceased to see this outdoor storage operation happening for 6 months under the previous zoning ordinance, you lose your nonconforming status, right? So I'll let John speak to the specifics of what was going on in the building and how that is viewed. But use of the building is one thing, and obtaining a business license to formally say that you are legally conforming with all of the ordinances of the city is a completely different thing. So perhaps there were things that were going on, but there was apparently, based on city records, no attempt to obtain business licenses, as the appellant says that this was an ongoing business for 20 years or so, basically. You would typically have a document trail that would say, this is the business activity that has been going on for this period. And that simply was not produced. Also, again, the caretaker dwelling, there were no permits related to establishing a caretaker dwelling. No doubt, perhaps there could be a residential component here. But again, we're talking about the absence of a paper trail. And when we look at the purpose for which this was originally believed to be nonconforming, we don't see outdoor storage in association with that. So this has always been a warehouse, but unfortunately, because of the policies and the ordinances of the city, it is not legal anymore based on the practices of this particular landowner, even though they may have been there occupying the space, if that makes sense.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Y'all get a chance to come back up in a minute. Thanks, Edward. Any other questions?
I would like to hear why, if the petition were addressed, why there's no paper trail, if they have a response for that. We can wait
until
after
they're going to get a
comment.
Chance. Yeah. Before we enter public comment, I think Sally tried to explain this. I have one card of folks that want to speak. If anybody besides this one lady wants to speak, it'd be a good time to fill out a card.
I did ask them just a minute ago, and they're electing to have her represent the community.
Oh, okay.
Yes,
okay,
sir.
Great. All right. Mrs. Darby, would you like to come forward, please?
Morning.
Morning.
I have a teacher voice. I'm Valeria Reynolds Darby, and I'm the president of the Taylorville Community Improvement Association, Incorporated. If it is permissible with the body, can the residents of Taylorville please speak?
Sure, go ahead. Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
I live there,
so. Yes, sir. I understand. Y'all can sit down there. It's not just about being heard. It's going into recording for the minutes. So, yeah.
I'll try to use my inside voice.
No, use the outside. Yeah. It helps me to hear.
Okay. We, the residents of Taylorville, stand with the recommendation of the Zoning Board for 25-004784-ZBA of rezoning of 1313 Staley Avenue from RSF-6 to commercial. And if I'm not mistaken, that was denied. That's it.
Okay. Thank you very much. All right. Would the petitioner like to rebut public comment?
Yes, I would. There's a grievous misapprehension of Georgia law as regards a business license certificate. I mean, if you have a business in another town, you get licensed in that town. Betty White lives in Statesboro. Her primary tow yard is in Statesboro. My client is only required to have one business license for his construction company, and it's at another property that he owns. He is therefore not required to have one here. Ms. White was never required to have one to use this property that was a commercial warehouse as a supplemental commercial warehouse to her existing business in Bullitt County. So any questions about that?
He had ongoing business licenses and for multiple locations, or an ongoing business license. And
when he lived in the county.
Okay. For the same business that has occupied this.
Correct.
Hence the lack of paper trail.
Correct.
Any other rebuttal you'd like to offer before we enter into board discussion?
I mean, there was something in the other evidence, I think, that it was abandoned, was that there was a letter issued in 2014 when there was a question asked whether this could be a car lot, and that was supposed to be evidence of an abandoned use. That was an inquiry about whether you could change an existing nonconforming use to a completely different one. It's no evidence that the nonconforming use that was there was abandoned. It's just saying, no, you can't put a car lot there. Okay, so I can't change the existing nonconforming use to a different nonconforming use. That makes sense. The ordinance does say that, but it doesn't say that what was there was abandoned.
Okay.
That's all.
All right, thank you. Mr. Agnost, is there any testimony that you need to give here? I seem to have skipped you somehow. Or either you're hiding at one or the other.
You don't have to hear from me if you don't want to. The only thing I'll really point out is the documentation from the 2014 to 2015 time period, and the letter that the appellant's attorney just referenced. The purpose of including that in the background documentation was not to confirm that the use was abandoned. It was to confirm that the applicant and the previous owner were informed on multiple occasions that commercial and industrial uses were not permitted on this property any longer. The other important part of the documentation from that period is that when the appellant applied for an electrical permit, that permit was not issued until almost a year later. And there is email evidence that the appellant was told, we can't issue this electrical permit if your intent is a commercial use. And his response was, the purpose of this property is storage of my personal vehicles. So it seems like the appellant was aware at some point that this type of business was not allowed, and then represented to the city that he was not going to be operating a business. And that's all I have to say.
All right. Turning into board discussion. Mr. Griffin.
Nothing to say.
Ms. Jones?
I don't have anything additional to say.
Mr. Turner?
No.
Mr. Condon?
I have a question.
What's that?
For
yes, sir.
Representative.
Yes, sir.
Sorry, I've forgotten your name. My apologies.
Patrick Condon.
The current use and the continued use has been storage of equipment owned by the construction company of the owner of the property.
And his personal cars are there as well.
Personal, yeah.
But I will say that typically when you have a large automobile collection that you cannot store at your house, you would need to take it to a commercial warehouse. Yeah. And you would not need a business license if you happen to own that commercial warehouse.
That's true. He's not intending to operate a separate commercial business that outside of what he's currently doing. It's all his personal business and personal items and so on that he's using the facility for.
It's for his contracting company.
Right.
It's a commercial warehouse. He uses it as such. It does have a residence there. when that, so there is a separate business, and that's just property management. It's somewhat attendant to his business of general contractor. It's houses that he might come into possession of, and instead of selling them,
but,
rent them.
But he owns that business.
Correct.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Do you have any other comments, Mr. Condon? Mr. Plum.
Yes, the question on the first part of this, at least, is kind of the burden of proof is, you know, how much evidence one way or the other do we need for the city to prove that there was or was not, you know, an operating business the entire time there? And, you know, does that fall on the applicant to prove, you know, that at every, you know, 6 month juncture during this entire period that there was an operating business? We know there's one now. You know, there's some evidence that maybe at some point it ceased, but maybe not. It's kind of figuring out.
I think the thing, Mr. Punk, is that it's not an operating business. It is the storage facility warehouse for the man who owns the building. And so
for his operating business.
Correct. But he's not operating a business out of there, if you get my meaning.
Yeah.
So if he had an office and people were driving over there, or he was renting a warehouse, a section of the warehouse to somebody else, then he would be operating a commercial business out of that facility. But what he's not doing is acting in that capacity. So, for example, if he just kept his personal car collection in there and he only drove over there every few months, so when the weather changed and he wanted to take his Corvette convertible out for a ride, that doesn't mean he's not utilizing the facility as his personal storage warehouse. And I believe that's what you're asking, is to continue to use it as your personal storage warehouse.
Not just for his cars. He's asking to put his electrical equipment and his things and come and go and store and property manager.
But it's his stuff. It's not commercial in the sense of bringing other.
It's not like I guess like my place where I have delivery trucks coming in and employees and customers. And
that's an operating business out of there, as opposed to the one of his guys drives over to grab a truck.
To get some clarification.
Please be quiet now. We can't have more discussion with all the mumbling. Everybody settle down.
How would we know that he would not change? Because who's going to have the oversight of that?
Well, that's the city's responsibility.
Okay. But if it's granted, then who's saying that he's not going to do it? See, that would be my question.
I think that's what he's looking for. It is all along, this has been able to be used as a commercial property.
Yeah.
As the owner wants to use it. And then I think he's gotten a letter. All of a sudden, he can't do that anymore because they're saying that there was a lapse in the use of the nonconformity. And he wants to continue being used as a nonconforming property, like it, he says it always has been. The city's saying it was, and then it wasn't, and now it can't be anymore. He wants to go back to how it was, to use it as it was before.
Yeah, my fear is I hate to take people's rights away from them without the city proving that he stopped utilizing the facility, as you know, for whatever reason. In other words,
I agree.
He has the rights. He owns the building. According to him, he's operated his business in the sense of, you know, equipment in and out of there and that type of thing. You know, I would hate to have the burden on every individual who owns property in the city of Savannah to have to say, well, I'm using this, you know, every month, put my hand in the air and say I'm using this, so that the city can't arbitrarily tell you that you can't use it anymore. There's a lot of nonconforming uses here in the city. And the, you know, the thing you have to be careful of is people invest their time and their money and their livelihoods and their life savings in properties and businesses and so on, that you just don't want to arbitrarily say, you know, that, you know,
so
you can't use it anymore.
So am I understanding that it has already been denied, that they have taken that away already?
He's appealing that.
He's appealing that.
Yeah.
Okay. And
their position is that he stopped using it. Okay. And they're saying that he has to prove that he
never
has
stopped.
Continuously used it. But if you never knew from the beginning that you have to have this proof of continuous use, how do you do that?
It's no different than if you got a bill from the hospital or the IRS in the mail that said you owe us money, proof you don't. Yeah. And that's what's happening here.
John, you want to add something?
So the revenue department at the city does require all businesses to renew their business tax certificate on a yearly basis. And the appellant has stated that he has business tax certificates in the city of Savannah, so he is aware of that requirement. So there is actually a process where you would.
He said he had them with the county.
Okay. So, but there is a process where you have to raise your hand once a year and say, yes, I'm still operating this business.
If you have a business with the county and you have a county certificate, do you also have to have a city one?
That's my understanding, but I'm happy to check with that, with the revenue department.
Well, regardless of whether it's right or wrong, if it was evidence to be presented, it should have been brought here today while this hearing's going on, not later on. I mean, right now it's not here. Mr. Condon, do you have anything else you'd like to say?
I wonder, did we look at the next application, pause this and look at the next application to see how one interacts with the other? Or?
Well, so basically, if we're gonna overturn the decision, we don't need to hear the second one because there's no variance needed.
Well, it's on the agenda.
They would request to be withdrawn. They're getting a variance based on what they've been told by the zoning administrator. If we overrule that decision, that there's no variance to act. There's no longer a variance. Legally confirmed.
I think we need to deal with this and then consider that. So do you have anything else you want to say, Mr. Plum?
No, I think that's
Mr. Ball, do you want to say anything?
Yeah, this is complicated. I mean, obviously this was built as a commercial property and then the zoning changed, and you know, I'm sure these folks that have houses that back up to it don't want him to start a nighttime rock breaking business there, but it doesn't seem like that's what's being asked for. But it seems like it would be good if some lighter zoning could be approved there that recognizes what's happening but protects the residents, or a buffer zone. But, you know, we're not being asked to rule on that. We're being asked to rule on this.
Personally, I'd love for 70 houses to come out then, but, you know, that's just me.
Well,
it's in a flood zone. It's on the railroad tracks. I'm sure not that. Yeah, it's tough. It's tough that this was developed the way it is. That there's a warehouse in front and there are houses and then there's this. It is very mixed together.
Is there any other board member that wants to add anything before I call for a motion? Anybody? Someone care to make a motion? Speak it out.
I'd like to make a motion that we overturn the previous. The previous zoning of the
The determination of the zoning administrator.
That's right.
All right.
You just said.
Mr. Griffith has made a motion to overturn the determination of the zoning administrator. Is there a second to the motion?
I'll second.
Second by Mr. Plunk. Is there any discussion on the motion? Mr. Griffith, how do you vote?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
No.
Mr. Turner?
No.
Mr. Condon?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
And Mr. Ball?
Yes.
All right, the motion passes and the determination of zoning administrator has been overturned. Next, we're going to hear 1313 Staley Avenue variance to reestablish a nonconforming use in RSF 6 zoning district 25-004785.
Issued with the drawback, you indulge.
The petitioner has made a request to withdraw his request for reestablishment of nonconforming use.
Should that be a motion?
The practical effect of the last decision in my mind trying to work through this was that sufficient.
Would you like to take a 3-minute recess while you consider it?
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a 3-minute recess.
He said it didn't. And now he said they
Right. No, not all. It's not the time. No, it's
All right, y'all. Really? Come on. We're almost there. We're in the short rows.
Who better than you?
Yeah. All right. Edward, before you give your presentation, I believe the petitioner has mentioned he might want to withdraw the request 25-004785. Is that correct?
That's correct.
All right. Do I hear a motion to withdraw 1313 Staley Avenue variance to reestablish a nonconforming use in RSF 6 Zoning District 25-004785?
Motion.
Mr. Condon has made a motion to withdraw the aforementioned request. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Plunk. Mr. Ball, how do you vote?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Mr. Condon?
Yes.
Mr. Turner?
Yes.
Mrs. Jones?
Yes.
Mr. Griffith?
Yes.
Okay. Motion passes and this item is withdrawn. Lastly, we're going to hear 18 East 34th Street variance for removal of condition placed previously by ZBA in 2017, 25-004861.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the board, Edward Morrow again. This is a slightly different format of request. You'll notice that you have a 2017 staff report here in front of you. And that was done intentionally because this is not a consideration of a variance request anew. This is a request that came before this board on the November 22nd, 2017 agenda for the purpose of modifying a standard under the previous zoning ordinance that stated that non-residential uses were restricted to the ground level floor within the mid-city district. And in essence, the board, the biggest debate in regard to this particular request was as to whether or not the petition could be granted, in essence. Is this a standard that was able to be modified? Of course, the board ultimately did go ahead and decide to grant this request. And so just to give you a little bit of background, this is an 11,700 square foot parcel located at 18 East 34th Street. This is in the current streetcar district, previously identified as Mid-City. And what is requested was to have an office use not only on the ground floor of this historic residence, but to extend that so that it would be used on both floors of the residence. Currently, the TN, I believe this would be the TN2 standards, would say that mid-block, the only way that you can have a non-residential use is that it's on the ground floor. Upper story would be residential. And so there was a similar sort of setup under the previous zoning ordinance, and that is the standard that was modified. You're not being asked to modify something in relation to a use today. That approval was given by the ZBA in 2017. There was a condition that was placed on the board's approval to state that the structure and the parcel are owned by the Archdiocese. It's a religious organization that owns the property. And so the board attached, I would speculate that this is in relation to the way that the request came in, administrative office for a religious institution. Because they were a religious institution, that language carried over into their recommendation to state that this office use could be upstairs for a religious affiliated institution, not a place of worship, an administrative office run by a religious affiliated institution. And so today we have a request to modify that condition of approval. Actually, you're not going to see it here because staff recommended denial, but the variance was granted to allow the upper story use. Mr. McCorkle is going to speak to you briefly about modifying that request. And staff does recommend approval of this as fundamentally the only use that would be permitted here would be office. There is no request to change the use. There is no request to add additional uses to this. This will not become some other use that is permitted within the district. It is still requested to only be an office, but an office occupied by a tenant that is a non-religious affiliated organization, if that makes sense. So I will allow Mr. McCorkle to come forward but staff does recommend approval of this amendment to modify that condition of approval.
Thank you, Edward. Robert McCorkle here on behalf of the petitioner. I'm here representing both, I guess, the Episcopal Diocese, who's the owner of the property, as well as the law firm of Campione and Hackney and their real estate ownership entity. This is a bit of a strange request. What we're requesting today is that we remove the condition that the upper floor office use be for a religious institution only. That's the simple request. The second floor office use was approved with a condition. We're asking to remove that condition. Just a couple of quick things about this. This has been an office building for the Episcopal Diocese since 2017 when this was granted. The original residence was constructed in 1882. You can see a picture of it here. And the diocese is now selling the building. Our client's buying it to put a law firm into the building and on both floors, hopefully. There's also a carriage house in the rear that's a residence upstairs, which is going to remain a residence, just in case that was a question. They intend to do restoration work on the site. I believe the COA has already been issued. It had staff recommendation for approval, I know, but they're replacing some rotten wood and restoring and replacing the wooden windows and doing some roof repair, as well as doing a fence replacement on a portion of the property for the building. I think it's important to note that we're not inserting a new use into either this building or into TN2 in general. This block, if y'all are familiar with it, has a lot of commercial and institutional uses on it already. This building right here is the Brandon Searcy and Smith Law Firm, which occupies both floors of the building as well as the carriage house in the rear. Across the street from this is SCAD, owns about half the block, which is used for classrooms. And if you look at this here from an aerial standpoint, on our block, you've got Pinion Construction here. This is a restaurant here. Again, law firm here. SCAD takes up this. You have a series of duplexes across the street. And this is a multifamily, I think, quadplex on the end right here. And so there are significant commercial and institutional uses I mentioned already on the block. And this is just a continuance of what's already there. When the client originally came to me, we actually looked at this as doing it as a rezoning. And we thought maybe the proper thing here, this is really an office building now. Maybe we rezone it to TC1 or something like that would just allow it to continue that way. And talked to Brandon Searcy and Smith actually about doing it for both parcels. And ultimately the conclusion we came through discussion with staff and with the neighborhood association is that they didn't really want us to do that because we would be injecting uses that don't already exist onto the block, which I think was an understandable way. And frankly, I'd like to give thanks to Edward and thanks to staff for helping come up with what I think is an elegant alternative solution, which is removing this restriction so that it can continue to be in office without having to be rezoned. And so, you know, I'm a resident and my office is in an 1868 historic former residence, law firm. And we are in a downtown residential district, and we've been there for 45 years, and it's a good use of a building like this. It's a large-scale historic building. It allows it to be maintained and restored appropriately, and it's a good functioning use with the neighbors around it. We did get an email with approval of support from the board of the Thomas Square Neighborhood Association of our petition, and there was some correspondence also with the one neighbor. There's one residence on this block, which is here, which I think is a duplex. There's one residential site on this block on this side, and we had some back and forth yesterday, and then we forwarded it to staff, but they ultimately came back and said ultimately they supported our use for the office with the understanding that we weren't injecting any additional uses into the site. So with that, we support staff's recommendation and ask that the condition be removed.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the petitioner? All right. Thank you very much, sir. There's no members of the public here. There's any board member have anything they want to say about this? Would someone care to make a motion?
I make a motion that we follow staff recommendation and approve the removal of the variance restriction.
All right, Mr. Condon has made a motion to grant the requested variance to remove the restriction. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Second by Mr. Plunk. Any discussion on the motion? Mrs. Jones, how do you vote?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Mr. Griffith?
Yes.
Mr. Condon?
Yes.
Mr. Turner?
Yes.
Mr. Ball?
Yes.
All right, motion passes and the variance is approved. And since there are no other items on the agenda, we are adjourned.